I'm standing here with James Ellsworth. And James, no offense, but what in God's name are you thinking stepping into the ring with a monster like Braun Strowman?
What am I thinking? Having a match on Raw is a dream come true for me. I didn't know it was going to be against Braun Strowman, so yes, I'm nervous. Yes, I'm scared. But if I could somehow, some way, pull off the upset, because I truly believe any man with two hands has a fighting chance, I can only imagine what that may do for my career.
Choke slam, face plant for Mr. Ellsworth. Do we get an EMT out here?
It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Eight Brock Lesnar, conquered the street.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
He's fat. You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 453 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here on this rainy Sunday here in New York, July 31st, 2016. I am the Solid Monster. We are exactly 3 weeks away, 3 weeks to the day of our SummerSlam meetup, August 21st at 2 p.m. at the KBH Beer Hall in Brooklyn, only a few blocks away from the Barclays Center. You can RSVP for the event on our Facebook fan page if you have not already done so. We have Bill Apter as our special guest. He'll be there selling and signing copies of his book, and he'll be taking pictures and mingling with everybody. It's going to be a lot of fun. I hope to see many of you there. August 21st, again, head over to our Facebook fan page. You'll see the invite. If you think you might be able to make it, try to RSVP. Otherwise, you could just show up if you find out that day that you can make it. It starts around 2 o'clock in the afternoon. It's going to go more or less until 6 o'clock, and I think at that point, everybody who is going to SummerSlam is going to make their way over to the arena, so hope to see you there. If you have not yet taken advantage of our Audible offer, you may do so by using our URL, audibletrial.com/solomonster. You can try out the Audible service for 30 days. You get one free audiobook on us when you use our link. And even if you should cancel your trial for any reason in those 30 days, and if you do, you will not be billed, you still get to keep your book. So get yourself a free book right now, audibletrial.com/solomonster. If you like what you hear each week, you can make a PayPal donation on thesolomonster.com. That'd be kind of cool. You'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname and a shout-out here on the air. I want to say thank you to our loyal supporters, John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Misfit Miguel Mendoza, Ready to Rumble Robert Castaneda, Nemesis, Nathan Moyers, Beast Mode, Brock Joseph, The Human Torch, Troy Smith, Pull No Punches, Alan Ragasa, Alvin Chainsaw, Siegerts, The Dark Serpent, Derek Gibbs, Your Girlfriend's Crush, Gary Smith, The California Kid, Gabriel Solis, The Bakersfield Brawler, Kevin Velato, High Society, Thurman Taylor IV, Cyborg, Samuel Schotter, and Virginia Dynamite, Dwayne Horley. Thank you to everybody who made a donation. And with that, I'm also here to announce PayPal Rumble 3. It's coming up next Sunday. We have done a couple of these now, and they've been very well received. We've had four winners so far, all of whom have been very happy with their Sound Off shirts, by the way. Starting today, going through next Sunday, that's August 7th, let's say 10 a.m. Eastern. So for the next week, if you make a PayPal donation to the Sound Off of $10 or more, not only will you get yourself a shout-out and a nickname here on the show, but you will be automatically entered into our random Rumble drawing for a free sound-off shirt from our Pro Wrestling Tee store. And it's so nice we're doing it twice. I'm picking two winners again this time, because two is better than one. So again, you can make a donation on thesolomonster.com. You'll see the button on the right-hand side of the page. $10 or more, and you are in. And we will pick two winners on the air here, episode 454, next Sunday. We have yet to have anybody repeat in our PayPal Rumble the way Hulk Hogan and Shawn Michaels did in the Royal Rumble. But hey, it could happen because it is a completely random drawing and anybody can enter. Everybody has an equal shot at winning this thing. So it's like they say with the lottery, you got to be in it to win it. If you're not in it, you can't win. There was a ton of new content that went up on our YouTube page this past week. Now is really the best time to subscribe if you have not already done so. YouTube.com/TheSolemnMonster should take you right to the page. We had the Battleground review for the pay-per-view last weekend. That went up early Monday morning. There was a brand new episode of Sound Off Gamer where I play as Eva Marie, which just has disaster written all over it. And a brand new interview with Diamond Dallas Page, which I have since pushed out to everybody as Sound Off episode 452. You may have noticed that last night. You got a little pop-up notification. I know some people saw that and thought, oh, a new episode. And it was like, oh, man, it's the same interview I heard on YouTube. With some of these things, I give priority to YouTube. I'll push it out to YouTube. They'll have it for a day or two. Some of them don't get pushed out to the feed, but I went over an hour with DDP, and I thought it was a really good interview, so I wanted to get it out as widely as possible. So you can still go on the YouTube page and listen to it there. Give it a thumbs up. Leave comments. That would be awesome. Or if you just want to listen to it in Stitcher and the usual ways, you could do that as well. We have a free Android app for, I know I haven't mentioned that in a while. You can get the show in there. Or if you want to use something like Podcast Addict, I know a lot of people use that. Some of these shows have been a little wonky on iTunes. I'm not sure why. This one still hasn't pushed to iTunes last I checked. I have no idea. I have no control over that. It's completely random the way that works sometimes. Hopefully iTunes will get their act together on that front. But the interview with DDP, you know, send him a tweet, @RealDDP. Let him know what you thought of the interview. It was very cool of him, I think, to give us as much time as he did. He spoke very candidly about what he thought of WWE giving him that stalker angle, the stalker gimmick, when he came in 2001, why he thought they gave it to him. He lays out his whole pitch, detail by detail, for how he would have debuted if it were up to him on Raw to kick off a People's Champion against People's Champion angle with The Rock. So that was pretty cool. It's good stuff, so check it out. I got a couple more interviews in the pipeline over the next few weeks, so as I said before, now would be a good time to subscribe to our channel on YouTube if you have not already done so. As for Battleground, you can get my thoughts on YouTube, but just to give you the quick overview here, I thought it was a really good show. I thought the pay-per-view was very enjoyable. There were some great matches on there, and I would say it was a great 48 hours. From Sunday to Tuesday for WWE, SmackDown being the weakest probably of all the shows. Not even probably, SmackDown being the weakest of all three. But it was still a great 48 hours for the company. I saw their quarterly earnings came out, the network numbers are up, revenue is up. It was a good week for WWE. And it was one of the best Raws maybe in years. Talk about Monday Night Raw here from this past week. They were live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Very rare that I put up a Raw Insta poll and get as many votes as we did here, almost 3,000 votes. That's a lot of votes. And see the percentages so lopsided, and lopsided in favor of the show. 96% thumbs up, 4% thumbs down. That is easily the most lopsided vote I've ever done. Near unanimous praise for the show. When was the last time that even happened? I can't even remember. And yeah, I saw on our Facebook page that Vince Russo hated the show. He said it was the end of pro wrestling as we know it, I guess because Finn Balor beat Roman Reigns in the main event. And you know what? If Vince Russo hates the show, then you know you're doing something right. This was the most fun that I've had watching Raw all year. It may have been the best Raw going back even to last year. An excellent start to this new era of theirs, largely because for once, it actually felt new. It wasn't just lip service, it wasn't just a buzzword or a catchphrase. There were a lot of elements of the show that felt fresh, that felt, you know, it felt like it lived up to the billing. You know, they were trying to push a new top star, to bringing back squash matches to get over new talent, to the pre- and post-match interviews, to these new sweeping camera shots, to moving the announce table, something as simple as moving the announce table next to the stage, which is where it used to be for a few years in the mid-2000s, to the commentary of Corey Graves, who is already 1,000 times better than JBL. And I thought really brought the best out of Michael Cole. And really, the announcing in general on this show was much improved. There seemed to be a renewed focus on calling the action in the ring instead of just bantering about random bullshit. The new intro, the new music, the red ropes. Such a subtle thing, I'm not even sure if half of you guys even noticed that they went from the silver to the back to the red. The little changes they made to the set, they have the arches now. I saw some people say, oh, it's just the same set they used for SummerSlam in 2013. You know what? It might have been. It's not a radical change. The stage really doesn't look that much different. But any change is welcome because, you know what? It's good to change things up every now and then. And I'm always harping on that. They pumped all this money into that new stage and the LED lights and everything. But I look at this show on most weeks and there's this feeling of sameness. So the changes might have been minor, but it's cool with me. Hopefully they make more. You know, even the authority figures. We have two of them. We have two authority figures on this show. But they were limited to the opening segment. I don't think we saw Mick Foley or Stephanie McMahon for the rest of the show after that. She didn't even slap anyone. And don't forget, you know, we still have the cruiserweights. We haven't seen them yet. Just think about how some of those matches are going to look with those sweeping Skycam shots that they have now. And the Skycam, by the way, is really cool. That's one of the really cool new little elements to the show that I appreciate. It's also interesting how the opening video now ends with a shot of Sasha Banks instead of Roman Reigns. I can't ever remember it ending with a woman before. The shot of the announcers standing up when the show started reminded me a lot of how Raw used to open back in the day. It's something they've been doing on NXT for a long time. Again, a small change, but I just ran down a whole laundry list of small changes, and when you add them all up, it creates a very different feel for the show. Now, compare that with SmackDown, which I did watch and I will review. Aside from using some of those new camera angles, it didn't really feel much different than your average WWE show. Raw felt fresh. SmackDown did not. JoJo handled the ring announcing on this show. There was no Lillian Garcia. Her father has been battling cancer, and I saw that she hasn't tweeted since July 22nd. And she said at that time, they were expecting results back. I guess her father was having a CT scan that Monday, which would have been the day of this show, to see if the cancer treatment that he's undergoing was working. And she has not posted anything on social media since then, which is very concerning. So I would say keep Lillian and her family in your thoughts. Maybe send her a tweet. Hopefully everything is okay. They have the entire roster out on stage with Foley and Stephanie in the ring. Stephanie called Roman Reigns a loser and said it was his fault there was no WWE title on Raw. We'll get back to that in a second. Foley announced the creation of a new championship for Raw. You knew it was coming. You knew it was just a matter of time. They're bringing back the dual titles. Not very happy about this, but it is what it is. You need something to compete for. And he said it's going to be a title that represents the WWE universe. And as such, they are calling this new title the WWE Universal Championship, a name that has been universally panned all week by most people. I hear the name Universal, and you know, besides Universal Studios, it actually would probably make more sense for this to be the new TNA title, to be honest with you. But besides that, I think of the Universal title they have in Carlos Colon's promotion in Puerto Rico. They've had a Universal title dating back to the early 80s. So this name is nothing new. But again, this is what happens when you create a second title. I wish they didn't have to do it, but they're doing it. And as far as the name goes, you know, it doesn't really bother me the way that it seems to bother everybody else. I was dead set against them calling it the World Heavyweight title. Not necessarily bringing back the big gold belt. I like the big gold belt, but just it always annoyed me. It was one of those little things. I know it's stupid. I know it's minor, but you had a WWE championship and you had a world championship. And it was always like, just having those two names, it never made any sense to me. They're both world titles. It always sounded stupid. So I really didn't want them to bring back that world heavyweight title name. So I'm glad they went with something else. And really, honestly, let's be honest here. It's not that bad. All right. I think people are going a little overboard with the hate. I'm more concerned about how the belt is going to look after fucking 10 years of that spinner. You know, I'm worried what design are they going to go with for this thing? Because I've seen a bunch of mock-ups that people have put together this week online. And no offense to those people, but the ones I've seen, they all look like shit. I don't want them to, for example, just take the WWE belt and put a fucking globe in the center of it. That's just lazy. I don't want anything spinning either. I say, you know, more classy, less gaudy. That's kind of what I'm hoping for. So we'll see. I don't know if we're going to actually see what the belt looks like until SummerSlam, but we shall see. I'm more concerned about that, though, than the name. The Universal name to me, believe me, within a few months, everybody will be used to it. Nobody will be bitching about it. It'll be fine. So Foley announced two fatal four-ways on this show, with each winner meeting in the main event to determine who would wrestle Seth Rollins at SummerSlam to crown the first ever Universal Champion. Rollins gets a buy into the match, I guess, because he was not the one to eat the pin at Battleground. And also, he's their number one draft pick. Now, I don't think they explained any of this, but that would be why I think he just got an automatic buy into the match at SummerSlam. So Foley called out the eight men who would participate in these four-way matches, including Roman Reigns. The same Roman Reigns who was single-handedly blamed only minutes earlier by Stephanie McMahon for being responsible for the WWE title being on the competing brand. So they reward him with a spot in the four-way to win the new title. That was idiotic, even though, yes, it was technically Foley, I guess, and not Stephanie who announced him for the match. You know, I guess they could just say she gave Foley full autonomy over these kinds of decisions, and then maybe they already said that on TV. I honestly don't remember, but this is nothing new. I mean, this has been a huge logic gap in wrestling for a long time. Even, you know, go back to Austin and McMahon. If Vince McMahon hated Stone Cold Steve Austin so much, and Austin used to come out and say, "You're not going to fire me. I'm your meal ticket," which is true. Austin made them a lot of money. He was the most popular guy. But that didn't mean Vince had to put him in the championship matches. If Vince hated this man so much, and he thought he was such a terrible representative of his company, with the cussing and the beer drinking and the middle fingers, why the hell did he keep granting him title shots? Right? Doesn't make sense. So this has been a problem for a long time. Anyway, the other names were Sami Zayn, Sheamus, Chris Jericho, Cesaro, Rusev, Kevin Owens, and Finn Balor, making his Raw debut. So we had Balor, Owens, Rusev, and Cesaro was the first match. No demon paint for Balor, but I don't think he should use the paint for anything except pay-per-view matches. Balor was coming down to the ring, and this right here just goes to show you that they're really pushing this new era thing really hard. Balor's coming down to the ring, and Michael Cole is running down all of his IWGP titles, which is something JBL used to do. But in doing so, Michael Cole committed what, you know, you would think would be the cardinal sin. He used the words professional wrestling. Not wrestling. They'll slip that in every now and then. Professional wrestling. I was floored when I heard that. How sad is that, by the way? I'm watching a pro wrestling show and I'm shocked when they use the words pro wrestling. I was floored. They had an excellent match. Balor won with the coup de grace on the U.S. champion, Rusev, to earn a spot in the main event later in the show. Fans seemed to know who Balor was. He got a nice reaction. They were pretty loud for him, so that's a good sign. I think between that and the reaction that Bayley got at Battleground, and if you want to know my thoughts on that, again, the Battleground review is up on our YouTube channel. But between this and the reaction that she got at the pay-per-view, I think a good portion of the audience, it's safe to say, is at least aware of who the main stars are on NXT, if they don't watch every single week, and I think most of them probably do. I know NXT I've seen where it's usually one of the, if not the, highest watched thing on the network every week. I would say a good part of the WWE kind of core base audience watches NXT. They know a lot of the key names from NXT. I was hoping that they would do Balor and Reigns in the main event. I mean, we all knew Reigns was going to the main event at the end of the show. I mean, that wasn't a surprise. But I was hoping they would do Balor and Reigns with Balor going over and Reigns snapping and turning heel after the match. I was half right, at least. And also, I want to say this. You know, I mentioned Cesaro was in this match. I want to give credit to Robert from Houston, who wrote in. He had an idea for Cesaro beating Rusev. He could be the one to beat Rusev, maybe at SummerSlam for the U.S. title. And then you could have Stephanie McMahon forcing him to defend the championship, kind of like an open challenge, but not necessarily. Forcing Cesaro to defend the U.S. title on TV every single week as punishment for what he said on that draft show about wishing he had gone to SmackDown. I think that's an interesting idea. And as tired as that is, Stephanie McMahon, you know, kind of sticking it to one of the baby faces, it would be sort of a high-profile thing on the show for Cesaro to do. So I actually think that's a pretty cool idea. I'm thinking of in terms of people who could beat Rusev for that title. Hey, Cesaro's as good as anyone. So I think that's actually a pretty good idea. Nia Jax made her Raw debut. She beat local talent Britt Baker in a squash. 2 minutes in with the leg drop. I still think she ought to use the jackhammer as her finish, as she did on NXT a few weeks ago. The leg drop, it's weak. You know, it's no Hogan leg drop. Put it that way, brother. Somewhere in here, Britt Baker was busted open. It was either her nose or her mouth. I just saw the referee put the gloves on. This was the first jobber match on Raw in forever. And I love it. I love it. It's an old school tool. It works. Not everything old is old, right? There's a lot of old school techniques and old school things they could do that would work perfectly well here in this supposed new era. It helps get these people over as monsters. Really, what they're most useful for, these matches, is getting over people's moves. Like when Razor Ramon debuted, there were certain moves that he used in pretty much every single one of his matches, right? The fall-away slam, the back suplex off the middle rope, the Razor's Edge. And he got that Razor's Edge move over, man. He would take those job guys, he would fucking bend those guys in half. And it became one of the most popular, you know, moves, and he became one of the most popular guys in the roster. Now imagine if they did then what they usually do now when they debut someone new, which is on night one, out comes Razor Ramon on Wrestling Challenge, and his very first fucking match is with Mr. Perfect, you know, or some established guy. Chances are he's probably not hitting the Razor's Edge. If he does, they're going to kick out of it. So on day one, it don't mean shit. So the biggest thing about these matches that they're useful for to me is getting over their moves. Now, I think Nia needs a new move, but I thought in those 2 minutes it worked. She was in and out. You know, I don't necessarily want to see Nia Jax in a 10-minute match yet anyway. So she was in and out, and I thought it was great. I hope they do more of them. But again, think about it if they had debuted Nia Jax against Sasha Banks on her first night. She ain't winning with the leg drop if she wins at all. And for so many years, that's what they did. So I think one or two matches like this on each show is fine. Roman Reigns, Chris Jericho, Sheamus, and Sami Zayn was the other four-way match. Another excellent match. Roman Reigns, as hated as ever. So no sympathy for the guy. No great comeback story. And also, you know, a great match, but another great match involving Roman Reigns. You know, I know it's easy to shit on the guy. I'm not one of those people, but... And I know he was in there with a lot of talented guys. He was in there with Jericho, and Sami Zayn is awesome. And he was in the ring with a lot of talented guys at Battleground. He was in there with Dean Ambrose and Seth Rollins. Seth Rollins may be the best in the company. It's either him or AJ. And you think of the two pay-per-views before that, it was Roman defending the championship against AJ Styles, who may be the best in the entire company. So he's had a lot of great fortune to be in there with guys that are better than him, who were awesome pro wrestlers. And yes, that can sometimes hide someone's weaknesses, but I also think you get to a certain point, and it's the same thing with John Cena. You get to a certain point where, at what point do you finally give the guy credit for being a good wrestler and having great matches? Because Roman Reigns has been putting together a string of great matches. Whether you like him or not, he's not a dead body in the ring. He's in there, he's doing his part, and I think he deserves some credit for that. He had two really good matches on this show. The New Day came out to celebrate 337 days as the tag team champions. I thought this was one of the worst things on the entire show. The best part was the fan in the crowd holding up a sign that said, "Big E, please stop diving." All I could say to that is, "A fucking men," but he won't. They had a planted fan who I think was a pro wrestler. in the crowd. They brought him into the ring. And if he was a wrestler, which I think he was, why he didn't take any bumps like when Anderson and Gallows came out, why they didn't beat him up, I have no idea. But, yeah, they brought him into the ring. He was supposed to be a fan, and they did some comedy. It didn't work. I didn't think it was funny. It was painful. It was painful to watch. Thankfully, Anderson and Gallows did come out. They attacked the New Day. They laid out Big E with the Magic Killer. I usually like the New Day stuff. I'm not one of these people that thinks the bloom is off the rose, and I do think that they're funnier more often than not, but this I thought was just terrible. I thought this sucked. Neville and Curtis Axel. This was Neville's first match back on Raw since March. It would have had to have been March. I guess he missed WrestleMania. Between the crowd reaction he got and the match itself, I thought this was really disappointing. I just thought it was just another match. Red Arrow for the win. Really nothing much to it. Sasha Banks and Charlotte for the Women's Championship. I was stunned. I was stunned they were giving this away on Raw, and I was even more stunned by the outcome. But having said that, this was great. This was great. They gave them 15 minutes. They went balls out. They had a hell of a match. Probably one of the best women's matches they've ever had on Raw. I can't say it was the best because I feel like Trish and Lita had some real good ones back in the day, but I think this was up there. You won't find too many women's matches in the last 20 years on this show that really... It wasn't just that they gave them time. I mean, look, you can have a shitty 15-minute women's match, but they gave them time. I thought it was really good. There was the... it wasn't just a match that was thrown together. It was a... You know, there was a personal issue there. This has been building now for a long time. I mean, this was a match they should have saved for SummerSlam, and they gave it away on Raw. And again, it was one of the better ones I think you'll ever see on this show. Great work by both of them, even though Sasha nearly killed herself doing a dive to the floor. And I saw that, and I thought to myself, after watching Big E almost break his neck at the pay-per-view 24 hours before, I thought to myself, you know, they really, now's the time to just put a moratorium out there on these dives. Like, enough. Just get everybody in a room. I don't even know, I don't want to say ban dives, like ban all dives. There's got to be some limitations to this, though. Everybody does them. I know I've talked about this before. Everybody does them. The Usos do them in their matches. Luke Harper, big guy, right? He does dives in his matches. Roman Reigns is jumping over the top rope. He does dives. Everybody does a dive. So at what point do you say to yourself, what the hell does these dives even mean at this point if everybody does them? Like, eh. Eh. Most of them are like half-assed anyway, and I hate to single them out, but Dean Ambrose is probably the worst offender. You know, he comes through the ropes, and it just looks weak. What are you even doing? You're, like, shoving the guy backwards? Like, that's supposed to hurt them? I don't see what the point is. All you're doing is you're unnecessarily taking a risk and launching your body as a fucking rocket. Like, why take the risk? Just leave it to the guys who, you know, who probably should be the ones doing the dives, and half these guys have no business doing them. And that's the second time now that Sasha's almost killed herself. If you think about it, back to WrestleMania, she almost died doing a dive there. She came up short, but she tucked her head in the nick of time. I mean, they could form a stable in this company called the Diving Team. Problem is, there wouldn't be anybody left on the roster because they would all be part of the group. It'd be sort of how the NWO was there at the end. And Charlotte's a nut, too. She busted out a moonsault off the top rope to the floor. That looked crazy. Charlotte does have the best-looking moonsault, I think, in the entire company right now. Kurt Angle still has the best moonsault I ever saw. But Charlotte's is up there. There's a great spot where Sasha was on the outside, and she tossed the women's belt to Dana Brooke. And then she fell down and pretended like Dana hit her, and when the referee turned around and saw it, he sent Dana to the back. That was the old Eddie Guerrero spot. Obviously, Sasha idolizes Eddie Guerrero. She is obsessed with him. So that was cool to see her work one of his spots into her match. Sasha won. She won with the bank statement. New women's champion. Charlotte's reign over at 300-something days or whatever it was. Fans went crazy. They really treated this like a big, big deal. I thought for sure they would save it for the pay-per-view, but they wanted to make this a special show, and it worked. You know, mission accomplished. It definitely made the show feel more special to me. They've already announced the rematch for SummerSlam, so they are going to wrestle again. I have to say, I thought Michael Cole was on his A-game during this match, especially there at the finish. I thought he was just fucking great, And I wanted to make sure I mentioned that because I always mention when he annoys the shit out of me, which is very often. But inside, you know, inside there's a great announcer. I've said that before too. We saw it when he teamed up with Taz on SmackDown. You don't just forget how to do that. I think the two of them just had great chemistry. We've seen glimpses of it over the years on some of the pay-per-views. I loved his call, for example, of the CM Punk, John Cena match at Money in the Bank in Chicago. He has his moments. And I really do think by not having JBL there to kind of antagonize him and talk over him, it's going to make Cole, I hope it's going to make Cole, a lot more tolerable on the show. We got a post-match in-ring promo with Sasha, who said that she has dreamed of this moment since she was 10 years old. This is a new era. This title proves that she is the best. Yes! Yes, it does. That's what the title should always prove. Braun Strowman. He's on his own now. And I guess because Bray Wyatt is not there to keep control of him, he went and got himself a haircut. He took on a local guy named James Ellsworth, who Byron Saxton took the time to interview in the ring before he was killed. He's either 90 pounds legit or 150 on roids. Take your pick. And remember, he's not full-time, so he's not subject to the wellness policy. Byron wanted to know, why would you take this match? Are you insane? Why would you do that? And he explained that, well, when he took the match, he didn't know that Strowman would be his opponent. And as long as he has two hands, he had a chance. And if that isn't proof that concussions can cause brain damage, I don't know what is. He tried, but Strowman flotted him like a swy. Thank you, Michael Cole. And he finished him off with a reverse choke slam face first into the mat. I support more of these jobber squashes. It was Finn Balor and Roman Reigns in the main event. Shocking finish. And I'm not being sarcastic at all. Shocking finish. I hope they might do it, but I think kind of deep down I didn't really think they would. Balor won clean. Clean with his move in the middle of the ring. Coup de grace off the top. 1, 2, 3. I said before I was hoping Reigns would snap and all that stuff, but they interviewed Roman Reigns at ringside after the match. He said he respects Finn Balor. He wants him to beat Seth Rollins so that he can get another shot at Balor. So a nice birthday gift for Finn Balor. He turned 35 on Monday. A hell of a debut, too. Right out of the gate, they made a new star. That was clearly their objective on night one. They didn't draft him so high in the draft for nothing. And right out of the gate, they wanted you to know that this guy has arrived and that you need to take him seriously as a main eventer. And in the Battleground review that I did on Monday morning, you heard me suggest this very match, Seth Rollins against Finn Balor, as a direction for SummerSlam. And so obviously I'm very happy to see that become a reality. I wouldn't have pitched it if I didn't. Now, as far as SummerSlam goes, I think it's way too early to put the title on Finn Balor, unless, and I actually think this would be pretty neat, I would be okay with them putting the belt on him only if it led to a double turn with Rollins, and he had the club come out and help him win the championship. So we get Balor, Anderson, and Gallows as a heel group, or, you know, I'm sure they'd be cheered by a faction of the crowd. Call them tweeners, whatever. With Seth Rollins being turned in the process and then chasing as the fan favorite. And I know it's slim and none that that happens, but I think that would be a lot of fun. Now, the bigger question is, what do you do with Roman Reigns at SummerSlam? Unless they're going to worm him into that match somehow, and I don't think they will. It's always possible. They have 3 weeks. It is possible Roman Reigns finds his way into that Universal title match somehow. But let's say he doesn't. What do you do with him? So I looked at this Raw roster. And to me, there's only three real options for him. And the options I see are Chris Jericho, Kevin Owens, or Sami Zayn. And Zayn is an interesting one, if only because if they did want to turn Roman Reigns, forget Seth Rollins. If they finally came around to the idea that, you know what, we probably should turn this guy. Let's give it a shot. What better person to get him there than Sami Zayn? Sami Zayn's the ultimate babyface, right? He's the ultimate underdog. Everybody loves Sami Zayn. And plus, I think that would be a fun program. I feel like the two of them would work very well together. Do that. Let's say you do that. And let Kevin Owens cost Finn Balor the title in the main event. And then you could do Balor and Kevin Owens coming out of SummerSlam. Owens can be so obsessed, so appalled that Balor just walked in and got a title match. He can't bear to let him have the championship. You could even draw on their feud from NXT. I think either one of those scenarios are fine with me. The only problem is if you do the scenario that I just mentioned, where you do Roman and Zayn, and you know the idea is that it kind of either begins the turn of Roman or he turns at SummerSlam. If you do it that way, and let's say you have Owens cost Balor the belt, and that's a program coming out of the pay-per-view, now you've got Seth Rollins, he needs a challenger. He needs a babyface challenger. So that's the only drawback if you do the second idea. But again, I'd be fine with either one of those scenarios. But the Balor Club deal to me is the one I like the most. And I like it for another reason too. There's been a lot of talk this week by people about Finn Balor and whether he deserves it, or oh, it's so unrealistic, he's small, or I don't like him, or he's boring, or he's vanilla. Everyone has an opinion. There's a lot of Finn Balor hate, there's a lot of Finn Balor fans. And I fall into the camp of Finn Balor fans, but I'm a reasonable person, I'm not a fucking psycho, and so I can at least admit that the guy's not perfect, he has his flaws, and his biggest weakness, to me, are his promos. His size doesn't bother me. I think he's got a great look. You know, he's got fucking muscles where people shouldn't have muscles. And when he wears the paint, he looks cool. Like, if you made a checklist of all the things you would want, yes, he's not 6'3", but you know what? He meets most of those check marks. The promos, to me, though, are a killer. It's not his strong suit. So I think surrounding him with Anderson and Gallows, who are good talkers, and spreading some of the speaking around so when they're out there, it's not just all on Finn Balor. It's the three of them instead of just him. I think it would do him a world of good. And I think it would help make that work a lot better. Plus, let's be honest here, they'd sell a shit ton of Balor Club merch. There's a lot of reasons for them to go in that direction. So we'll see. We'll see what they do. On the subject of Finn Balor, Ric Flair on his podcast said that while he likes Balor, he was sure to make mention of that. He likes Finn Balor. He thinks he's great. He said he reminds him a lot of Dynamite Kid, which I would take as a compliment. He thought Roman Reigns should have won that match on Raw. He's very partial to Roman. He admits it. He likes Roman. He's friendly with him. He said Roman is a handsome guy. He has one of the best looks of anybody in the history of the business. That's what he said. And he said he's a heavyweight. He said Roman Reigns is a heavyweight. Seth Rollins is a heavyweight, which is debatable. Probably more so now. Rollins definitely put on some muscle mass. He's definitely bigger and not quite as quick as he was before the injury. Before the injury, I don't know that I would call Seth Rollins a heavyweight, to be honest with you. But he said Roman's a heavyweight. The point is, he doesn't think that we will ever see the day, and he admits he could be wrong. He says he does not think we will ever see the day that a cruiserweight will be in the main event of WrestleMania. And he said personally he would pay money of the two main events, of the two title matches they've set up for SummerSlam, he would pay money to see Dean Ambrose against Dolph Ziggler over Seth Rollins against Finn Balor. Now, I listened to what he said myself. This is not just from a transcript. Oh, you didn't get the full context. No, I got the full context. I went and I listened to it. Because, you know, sometimes websites can print stuff and it's out of context, so I listened to it. Now, he admits he could be totally wrong about a cruiserweight never headlining a WrestleMania. What he doesn't realize is that he's already wrong. And I'm not even talking about Rey Mysterio. People have pointed out Rey Mysterio won the championship at WrestleMania 22. When we say main event, when Ric Flair says main event, I'm assuming, I'm 100% sure, when he says main event, he's not talking about second from the top, third from the top, middle of the show, WrestleMania 8, they had a double main event and the title match was in the middle of the show. When they say main event, when he says main event, it's the headline match. It's the match that goes on last. It's the match that closes the show with the big pyro celebration. That's what he means by main event. Rey Mysterio did not main event WrestleMania 22. So put him on the side. But Flair's already wrong. the very man who retired him at WrestleMania, headlined multiple WrestleManias, and there is no way that he was 225 pounds or whatever they billed him as. 200, maybe. Maybe. And that's being generous. And I'm not counting baby fat Shawn Michaels from 1992, 1993. I'm talking 1995, 1996 Shawn Michaels. He was a cruiserweight. They would never call him that, but that's what he was. What they built Finn Balor as on TV is probably what Shawn Michaels actually was at that time. Daniel Bryan. What did they bill him at? I think 205? 210? At WrestleMania 30, there's no way he was 210 pounds. You can shave 10 to 15 pounds off that. Flair's already wrong. And believe me, Finn Balor, you know, demon paint and all, he will headline WrestleMania one day. I have no doubt about that. That's something even Flair never did. He should have. In 92, they should have done Hogan Flair. But he didn't. And believe me, I love that Savage Ric Flair match. It was a lot better than Hogan Sid. But I don't care what they billed it as. It was not the main event. Balor will get there. It may not be next year. It may not even be the year after that. But he will get there. That demon entrance is tailor-made for a WrestleMania main event. He can carry his end of the match work-wise. I don't think his work is in dispute. A lot of guys can work, and they'll never sniff a WrestleMania main event. Look at Dolph Ziggler. But very few get an entrance like that and have as much invested in them as this guy does. They had him pin Roman Reigns clean in his first night on the main roster. Think about that. I know Roman's eating the proverbial Vince McMahon shit sandwich right now, but still, they would not put just anybody in that position. They chose to make him. That was not a mistake. But the whole thing is kind of laughable to begin with when you take one look at UFC and you see that Nate Diaz and Conor McGregor at 170 pounds... headlined a pay-per-view this year that did 1.5 million buys. Floyd Mayweather, he's 150 pounds soaking wet. He'll go down as one of the greatest pay-per-view attractions of all time. The WrestleMania main event should be no different. If Balor draws, his weight won't matter, believe me. If he flops, then he won't make it. But he has as good a chance as any. Because it's not just about height and weight, it's about look, it's about presentation, all of those things that are so important to WWE. That's why I think at the end of the day, he'll be there and he'll be fine. Now, on this show, they announced that Brock Lesnar will be back on Raw tomorrow night. And if Paul Heyman is not there, I don't know what he'll be doing. Hopefully not speaking. Maybe they can bring back Zach Gowen for one night and have Brock roll him down a flight of stairs again. But in terms of Brock, TMZ Sports broke the story this week that WWE is not going to be disciplining Brock Lesnar for failing those two USADA drug tests leading up to UFC 200 because, as a spokesperson for WWE told them, only full-time performers are subject to the company's wellness policy. The policy does not apply to part-timers like Brock Lesnar. Well, that's quite the loophole, isn't it? It's nice to at least have clarification about the policy. It took them long enough. So essentially what that means is that all part-time performers are seemingly exempt from the wellness program. That would include The Rock. That would include Triple H. And that would include The Undertaker. I guess the rationale being, you know, the wellness policy was designed to keep their full-time guys healthy. They're the ones who are on the road 250 days a year, whatever it is. That doesn't make it any less of a double standard. As long as we acknowledge the fact that there's a clear double standard here, and I've seen reports from some of the websites and the newsletters that a lot of the wrestlers are very upset. They see it as a double standard. Of course they do. Of course they do. Because it is. It always has been. It always has been. Vince McMahon, right? Remember that before Congress? He admitted he doesn't get tested. CM Punk in the interview he did with Colt Cabana when he was talking about his meeting with Vince McMahon and Triple H the night he walked out. Triple H told him, hey, look, Batista took the same piss test that we're asking you to take. And Punk just turns to him and says, did you? No response. So this is nothing new. I think it sends a terrible message that you could theoretically put whatever you want to in your body. You could take whatever you want, perform in their ring, probably get paid more than everybody else on the roster, and it's okay so long as you only work once a year or three times a year. But hey, at least they finally admitted it. Anyway, this was the best Raw all year. We got four great matches on a show that had a real fresh feel to it. I say well done. I hope they keep it up. They also announced Dean Ambrose is going to be on the next Stone Cold podcast. That'll be after next week's Raw. Let's talk about SmackDown Live from Buffalo, New York. I will be watching SmackDown this week again, although if I have any reason not to watch, his name is JBL. JBL was positively awful on this show. In fact, that's my new name for him, JB Awful. He just steamrolled over Mauro Ranallo over and over and over again. Just talked right over him. Would shout things for no reason. Maybe he has Tourette's, I don't know. He would repeat things that Mauro said after he said them. Why? I have no idea. Maybe he has dementia. Dementia and Tourette's, a terrible combo. I guess maybe he just likes the sound of his own voice, which is too bad because he's the only one who does. You know, it's like, what happened? When he first came back in, I think it was 2011, he was great. I liked his commentary a lot. I want to know what happened in the last 5 years that he could go from that to whatever the hell it is he's doing today. I thought David Otunga was fine. Didn't really contribute anything. You know, if Jim Cornette spotted Vince Russo's car in his rearview mirror and stopped short and caused a 20-car pileup on the highway getting to the arena and Otunga couldn't make it to the show, I don't think the show would be any worse off for it. I don't want to say it would be better, but it would certainly be no worse. Mauro was good, which is no surprise. But, you know, on Raw, I got the sense that having Corey Graves there might help lift up Michael Cole. I think him being there could turn out to be a really good thing on Raw. On this show, my fear is that JBL drags this guy down and makes people want to mute their TVs, and I really hope that doesn't happen. Because Mauro Ranallo is one of the better parts of SmackDown, and his commentary, I think he does really well at kind of getting you excited and getting you into the matches and more knowledgeable on the different participants. He's very JR-esque, I think, in that way, and I would hate to see him kind of get dragged down by JBL just by association. Otherwise, I thought it was a decent show. It just felt like it was missing something. It felt like any other WWE show aside from the new camera shots. Probably taking all their main eventers and putting them in the main event may have had a lot to do with that. It made the Battle Royal and the rest of the show fall kind of flat, I thought. I do like the fact that they updated the set. It's now ground level. There's no ramp or stage. Although I was told by somebody that the sets, I think both sets for Raw and SmackDown are not finished yet. So that's just something to keep in mind. Although I must say, and you can disagree with me if you want, but Raw clearly won the battle of the new opening intros. I think Raw's song kicks the SmackDown song's ass. Raw's song is Enemies by Shinedown. SmackDown song is called Take a Chance by CFO Money. I usually like CFO Money. I like a lot of the stuff they do for WWE, but yes, I'm giving Shinedown the win on this one. I mean, shit, I love the old Nickelback theme they used to have for Raw. I know Nickelback's even a bigger heel than Roman Reigns. So anytime I have a chance to mention that, I take it. I love mentioning that. They opened the show with the same kind of format that Raw did. They had the GM and the commissioner in the ring. The only difference is this time the roster was surrounding the ring and not all gathered up on stage because there was no stage. They made a six-pack challenge for later in the show to determine a number one contender for Dean Ambrose and the WWE title at SummerSlam. They picked John Cena, AJ Styles, Bray Wyatt, Dolph Ziggler, and Baron Corbin. And the fifth spot, they said, would be, or the sixth spot, I guess, would be filled by the winner of a Battle Royal, which turned out to be pretty lame. Zack Ryder in that Battle Royal went for an elbow drop off the top rope. He slipped. He fell. which was not his finest moment. He recovered well, though, but I cringed. I felt bad for him. I really did. You know, what the hell are you going to do? Shit happens. Apollo Crews won, which was the right move to make. Really, the only other ones that even had a realistic shot of winning this thing were Kane, God forbid, and Alberto Del Rio. So like Raw, they are now doing post-match interviews at ringside, which I really like. I think it's a nice touch. Apollo Crews did a standing backflip on the floor to celebrate his big win before telling Renee Young that he was not ready to celebrate yet. Oops. Probably shouldn't have done a backflip. They played a video package of Shelton Benjamin highlights. Senor Benjamin is coming to SmackDown. That's what he is, technically, right? Senor Benjamin? Shelton Benjamin just turned 41 years old a few weeks ago, which is hard to believe. I don't know if he slowed down any at 41. Actually, I saw a match that I forgot. Someone linked to it. It was a match from, I want to say, the Noah promotion in Japan. It was him and Goshi Ozaki. It might have been in the last few months. I don't know. But he looked great. He looked fine. Didn't look like he skipped the beat in that match. So he's a freakish athlete. I mean, Shelton Benjamin is one of the most athletic guys they've ever had. That's not something you lose overnight just because you're, you know, you're 40 years old. So I'm sure he's still a hell of an athlete. What I would do, I would have him wrestle Miz at SummerSlam for the Intercontinental title. Because I look at this roster and I don't see any other obvious challengers for that championship except maybe Apollo Crews. Who did win. Now, he didn't qualify. We'll get to this later. He didn't qualify to meet Ambrose at SummerSlam, but he did win a Battle Royal. So you could always say, well, he won a Battle Royal, and so that should at least get him an Intercontinental title shot. You could do that. But I think part of the reason you bring these older faces back, you know, they ain't putting the WWE title on Shelton Benjamin, but you could put the Intercontinental title on him. And one of the purposes behind bringing these older faces back is to put these new era guys over, right? That's what you would think. So give Shelton some big wins right out of the gate. Let him establish some credibility. Let him win the Intercontinental Championship. And then he can be the one to feud with Apollo Crews, and he can eventually drop the title to him in a few months. And then Apollo Crews, instead of beating the fucking Miz, which won't mean shit, it'll mean a lot more, I think, that he went in there, had some great matches with Shelton Benjamin, and beat him for the title. So I think that would be the way to go. Becky Lynch got her win back from Battleground. Natalya tapped out to the Disarmer. I thought the match was fine. The post-match stuff, though, with all the women coming out, it's just way too contrived. You know, it would have been cool, let's say, if Alexa Bliss comes out first, which she did, and that was it. Let her come out, let her establish herself on the show, but she came out, and then we had Naomi, and then we had Carmella, then we had Eva Marie. And I have to say this about Eva Marie. I did like her entrance. Total heel heat for it. She was the only one who came out without a microphone, which was very smart not to put a microphone in her hand. Instead, they had this Hollywood voiceover guy do her promo for her. So, you know, somewhere in the back, I'm sure Kalisto was trying to track down Kevin Dunn, trying to find out how he can get one of those. So the narration went like this. From Concord, California, comes the most stylish, elegant, bewitching, eternally beguiling, contentiously charismatic, and fantastically fascinating woman to appear in this or any arena. Allow yourself to be seduced, enchanted, dazzled, and entranced by the all-red everything herself, Eva Marie. I fucked it up there in the middle. I'll say this, I'm constantly dazzled and entranced by how she moves around in the ring like she's submerged in the ocean. So he's not wrong about that. Still no explanation, by the way, from the announcers of whether or not the women's title can be defended on SmackDown or if they're going to create their own version of the women's title. They made no mention of the tag team titles either, so that's still up in the air. Randy Orton came out, body-wise, looking more like Wade Barrett. He came out as Miz's guest on Miz TV. He's been a lot more jovial, Randy Orton has been, since coming back. That must mean heel turn. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding. It was either JBL or Otunga, probably JBL, who just goes, I have a feeling Brock Lesnar is watching SmackDown Live right now. I will bet you all of Donald Trump's imaginary $10 billion fortune that Brock Lesnar was not watching SmackDown Live. I guarantee it. So they set up a non-title match between Orton and The Miz that Orton won with not one but two RKOs. As if drafting the two mid-card champions in the fourth round didn't speak volumes enough about what they think of these belts. We had Rusev and The Miz getting pinned clean on back-to-back nights and still retaining their titles. And the Rusev one is fine. It was a match to determine a number one contender for the world title. You should put your U.S. champion in there. Or I guess for the Universal title. That Universal title name is going to take some getting used to. But the U.S. champ, he should be in the mix. So that really didn't bother me. It's seeing both champions get pinned on back-to-back nights like that. To me, that was a little much. We got a video hyping the debut of American Alpha next week. It took Kaz and Enzo all of 2 weeks to get over on the main roster when they got called up. It should really not take any longer than that for these guys. They're awesome. A local independent wrestler was standing in the ring when he was attacked from behind by a jobber. That man was Heath Slater. He cut a promo about how he wasn't drafted by Raw or SmackDown. He was the hottest free agent in the business. And Shane McMahon came out, told him to send in his resume. This is not the way to get attention. Slater told him, you can go to WWE Network and type in my name if you want to see my resume. This was actually, I have to give him credit, this was a hell of a promo here by Heath Slater. He was all fired up. He wanted Shane to put him in the main event and make it a 7-pack challenge. Suddenly, Rhino appeared behind Slater. And Shane McMahon said, you're right. I am looking at the hottest free agent. And Slater turned around and got gored. And if Rhino is the hottest free agent of the new era, I shudder to think what the old era must have looked like. So Rhino is back. He's been on NXT, but now he's been promoted to the main roster. Rhino's also running, by the way, for Congress. He is running for Congress in the state of Michigan. There is a Republican primary this Tuesday. I believe it's this Tuesday, and he is on the ballot. So that's kind of cool. So besides Shelton and Rhino, there's been a bunch of other names bandied about that are coming back. I don't think it's any secret. Jinder Mahal is coming back. Apparently he's going to be on the Raw brand. I won't spoil the other ones. I don't even know all of them anyway, but we are going to see more old faces coming back. Dolph Ziggler. Yes, that Dolph Ziggler won the 6-pack challenge over John Cena, AJ Styles, Bray Wyatt, Baron Corbin, and Apollo Crews. He pinned AJ Styles with a super kick. This was a very good match. I hate that it was AJ Styles who had to be the one to eat the pin, but he sold that super kick like death. Dean Ambrose came out. They had a little stare down. Daniel Bryan came out. Shane McMahon came out. They all celebrated their new main event for SummerSlam. Dean Ambrose and Dolph Ziggler is technically the main event of SummerSlam. I don't think it's going to end the show. it's the main event of SummerSlam if you can call a match third from the top a main event, which is what this is going to be, I'm sure. Maybe even fourth from the top if they slot Cena and Styles above them. I'm assuming it's going to be John Cena against AJ Styles at the pay-per-view. But I'm really happy for Dolph. I'm not going to lie and tell you I'm excited over Dean Ambrose against Dolph Ziggler as a main event match for SummerSlam. But, you know, that's what happens when you beat somebody down for so long. As long as they've beaten this guy down for, you lose a lot of that excitement that you used to have for the person. I mean, you get to a point where you have to build them back up to give them any sort of credibility. I mean, keep in mind, 7 months ago, it was this year, this calendar year, Dolph Ziggler got pinned on Raw by Heath Slater in 2 minutes. The same Heath Slater who went undrafted by either brand. So they have some work to do if they want to get this guy back to that level he was at before. But that doesn't mean I'm not happy to see him pick up the win. Doesn't mean I don't think he's going to kill it at SummerSlam, which I think he will. I think he's out to prove something. This is maybe the biggest match of his career. I was surprised, though. I thought it was going to be either Bray or Apollo. And I wouldn't mind WWE Champion Bray Wyatt, for the record. But you know what? The thing with Dolph, why not? Why not? Why not try? They have nothing to lose. Now that they have two titles again, they have nothing to lose. I mean, hell, you know what? I mentioned Kevin Nash last week wanting to be Dolph Ziggler's bodyguard. My take was, sure, why not? It's not like they're doing anything else with Dolph. So naturally, you know, days after I say that, of course, now here he is wrestling for the WWE title at SummerSlam. But you could still do Nash as his bodyguard. It wouldn't be the first time that Nash has interfered in a championship match at SummerSlam and cost someone the title. I mean, Ziggler's already morphing into HBK, so hey, why not go all the way with it? All he has to do now is start every promo with, "I got news for ya! I got news for ya!" Alright, he should have been a paperboy, Shawn Michaels. And if you're not a fan of bringing 60-year-old Kevin Nash back to be someone's bodyguard, I get it. Jay on Twitter, I want to give him a shout-out, he suggested Baron Corbin as sort of a modern-day Diesel for Dolph Ziggler. Now, Ziggler and Corbin have been feuding for months. Corbin also calls himself the Lone Wolf, so it would sort of kill that gimmick. But you could always try to make sense of it by saying something to the effect of, let's say Dolph goes heel in this whole thing, and, you know, after feuding with Corbin for so long, I gained respect for him, something like that. Now, the other question also is, why wouldn't Corbin, after having just beaten Ziggler in their feud, just kick his ass after he wins the title and demand a title shot? That wouldn't make much sense. But I do think someone like Dolph is much better with a manager or a bodyguard type. I know Ric Flair wanted to manage him. They said no, and they put Flair with Miz instead for all of 2 weeks. I liked it when he had AJ and Big E with him. He needs someone. If he goes heel, he needs someone. And if he does, Nash is as good as any. So Raw versus SmackDown week one is in the books. I threw up a poll. Over 2,400 of you voted, and the overwhelming favorite was Raw, 87% to SmackDown's 13%. We are in agreement. I thought it was a decent first effort for SmackDown, but Raw was really an incredible show from top to bottom. So a decisive victory for Monday Night Raw here in week one.
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
There was some good stuff on here this week, namely the debut of Kota Ibushi out of nowhere. He just sort of appeared. There he was on NXT this week. And No Way Jose's promo. That was the other highlight. We had Shinsuke Nakamura against Wesley Blake. Blake blew kisses at Nakamura, who caught each one, threw them down on the ground, and stomped on them. So Nakamura basically gave us a pantomimed reenactment of Wesley Blake's push. Kinshasa for the win. William Regal came out after to inform Shinsuke that he will be challenging Samoa Joe for the NXT Championship at TakeOver in Brooklyn, which makes me very happy since I have second row ringside seats for that show. Billy Kay took on Santana Garrett, beat her with a boot to the face. Santana Garrett was dressed like Wonder Woman. Didn't do her any good, unfortunately. Bayley formally requested her rematch with Asuka for the NXT Women's title at TakeOver. William Regal said he would have the paperwork drawn up. And you know what? Hey, if I'm Regal and I just saw Bayley get a taste of the main roster last weekend, I'm doing everything in my power to keep that woman happy and keep her on NXT. We got a weird vignette hyping a new addition to the NXT roster. All we saw was a person kind of off in the distance. They were kind of kneeling, I think, behind some grass. I couldn't make out who it was. I honestly thought it was a commercial at first. I was only half paying attention. So I guess we shall find out who it is very soon. TM61... against the team of Rob Ryzen, not to be confused with Terra Ryzen, and his partner Adrian Nails. Half of Ryzen's hair was red. He had a little Tatanka vibe going on here. TM61 won with their Thunder Valley finish. I like these guys, and I forgot to include them when I was running down the list of all the NXT teams last week. So we've got the Revival, we've got the Authors of Pain, we've got Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa, we've got TM61. And I believe that's it. If you take away American Alpha and the Hype Bros, I think that's the entire tag team division. Hideo Itami is back on NXT this Wednesday. Bobby Roode will also be debuting on that show. We had No Way Jose beating Steve Cutler, the same Steve Cutler who people still think looks exactly like me. The only difference is I don't have my swole going on like this guy does. I think, is that what they call it now, swole? Is that what it is? I actually think this guy looks more like Ron Perlman than he does me. And I sure as shit don't look like anything like Ron Perlman, I can tell you that. So, I don't know what you people are seeing. Jose won the match. He then grabbed the microphone. He cut a very intense, angry promo on Austin Aries. I was just trying to give him some good vibes. I wanted you to have a little fun. But Aries took advantage of this guy's cheerful disposition. Those were my words, not his. I can't imagine No Way Jose using the phrase cheerful disposition, nor should he. He then vowed to whoop his ass. I love this. I love the fire from No Way Jose here in this promo. Jose can talk. This is the first time we've really gotten the chance to see him speak. And it was a side of him I didn't know he had. You know, he's got those really kind of crazy eyes, right? He's got those psychotic facial expressions when he gets really angry. I'm impressed. I have to say, I am impressed. Kota Ibushi made his NXT debut against Buddy Murphy. The Full Sail crowd lost their shit when they realized Ibushi was wrestling. I thought Murphy, I got to give Murphy some credit though. You know, Ibushi is great. But Buddy Murphy, I thought, actually looked really good here. Ibushi caught Murphy with the best kick ever. Ever. Look at the reaction of the people in the audience when he hits that kick. That was me watching this on TV. I was just like, wow. He kicked his fucking head off his shoulders and immediately didn't even like waste any time. Immediately took him over for a bridging German suplex. And I've talked recently about how weird it is to see people winning matches with German suplexes, but I don't think there was a person in the world who would have watched this and thought there was anything wrong with him winning with that suplex if he would have gotten the three. Unfortunately, he didn't. But my God, I mean, this was in my top five favorite things, and probably the favorite thing of mine on any wrestling show that I saw all week. And I saw a lot of good wrestling this week. Ibushi hit him with the Last Ride powerbomb for the win, a fine showing for the Golden Star, as they call him, even as he continues to deny signing a contract with WWE. He keeps saying he wants to go back to Japan and win the IWGP title. I still think he's either signed already or is signing, and he'll be their top star when the Cruiserweight division launches on Raw. I would assume that'll be sometime in September when the tournament ends. Kota Ibushi is the lead star of the Cruiserweight division on Raw, by the way. I think it just would be fucking awesome. Because I feel like when you have the Cruiserweight division on Nitro in WCW, yeah, I mean, some of the guys would cut promos, but it wasn't really so much about them cutting promos, right? They used those matches as a way to get that Nitro show off to a hot start. And it was just 10, 15 minutes of nonstop action. The Cruiserweight stuff that you're seeing now in the Cruiserweight Classic, it's not all nonstop action. It's almost like the WWE style of Cruiserweight wrestling, which is fine. Some guys don't fly around. Some guys are more map-based. Some guys do fly around. I don't know that you really need to worry too much about a guy like Kota Ibushi not speaking English in order for him to still go on Raw and become a big star, because it all depends on how you book the Cruiserweight division. Are you literally just going to come up with a bunch of, you know, great matches and put these guys out there to kind of get the show started off hot? Are you going to put them in the middle of the show? Are they going to have storylines where they have to speak all the time? Because that won't work to his advantage. But I still think you could take a guy like him and kind of build that division around him. And I think it would make Raw, you know, it would make Raw a much better show in that you're giving people a wide variety of things. So you have your main storylines and guys cutting promos on each other and they're competing for the Universal title. But then, you know, you also have the women and then you also have the Cruiserweights. You give people a different mix. That's not a bad thing. That's not a bad thing. So I hope that Ibushi and a lot of these guys do end up on Raw in a few months. And I think they're going to do very well for themselves. But you got to see this kick. I actually linked to it. There's a little video of it on my Twitter at Solomonster. You got to check this thing out. I mean, you could see him slap the thigh and everything, but they timed it so perfectly. It just looks so brutal. Samoa Joe arrived late and was informed of William Regal's announcement earlier in the show. This greatly displeased the champion. He vowed to promptly fix things. So he went to the ring. He called out William Regal to tell him that I would be very happy to meet with you in the back, and I will suggest to you a suitable challenger that meets my satisfaction. And Regal told him, basically, you know, you either wrestle Nakamura or I'm stripping you of the title. So Joe finally acquiesced. He said, fine, I'll wrestle Nakamura. Nakamura walked out. He taunted Joe from the stage, and that was NXT. So they're building to Joe and Nakamura. I think it's going to be a hell of a match. I think that whole takeover card, even Bayley and Asuka, I think it's going to be It's going to be good. It's very hard for NXT to have a bad show. I don't know that it will top Brooklyn last year. But the fun part is they're going to try. And I'll be there for it. Cruiserweight Classic. Episode 3. No crazy stuff on this week's show. They really slowed things down with some of these matches. I enjoyed it. Zack Sabre Jr. and Tyson Dukes opened the show. They had footage of Tyson Dukes tearing his ACL in a match against Mark Jindrak on Velocity in 2004. So this is his second chance here to make it in WWE. That's funny to me. I think back to like Velocity and Metal and Jacked and those kind of shows from the early 2000s. And you had like AJ Styles and Samoa Joe and Bobby Roode. And if you look at a lot of the guys that were on those shows wrestling like one-offs for WWE, and a lot of them now where they are on the main roster and on the NXT roster, you know, this roster soon enough is going to be made up of almost entirely the Velocity roster from like 2003. It's kind of funny. So we had the crowd was very quiet for most of this match here with Zack Sabre Jr. and Tyson Dukes, because that's Zack Sabre Jr.'s style. He's very technically sound. He's very methodical, but he's very different than someone like a Ricochet or a Will Ospreay, who does tons of crazy stuff. So much so that, you know, I'm not sure by the time he's free and clear to come to WWE, if that's what he wants to do, who even knows at the rate he's going if Will Ospreay is even going to be able to pass a physical. That dude is all beat up right now. I saw he may have just suffered a shoulder injury, which would be bad news for his match in Rev Pro next month with Vader. But, you know, he's talked about all the injuries he's had so far in his career. The dude's only 23 years old. And he's admitted to having 7 concussions. Which is incredibly stupid to say that publicly if he does hope one day to go to WWE. And you could look no further than Daniel Bryan. Daniel Bryan, there would be a very good chance that Daniel Bryan would still be wrestling in WWE had he not publicly talked about, well, I've had 10 or 20 or whatever concussions in my life. That's what did him in. Now, for his health, hey, I'm glad, and hopefully he lives a long, productive life and he doesn't have any problems. Health-wise, it was a good move. But, you know, you're going out there and you're talking openly about all these injuries. He's had like 2 fractured heels and a separated shoulder, 7 concussions. It's like, what are you doing, dude? And I hear that, and I say to myself, I think the chances against his coming to WWE are pretty great if he doesn't start to tone things down a little bit. But anyway, Zack Sabre Jr., I know some people find his style of wrestling dull, but I love watching him, you know, the transitions out of holds from one move to the next. I like that. He's not a flashy guy, and I worry that a giant gust of wind might blow him away one day, but he's fun to watch. And he won with an umaplata, bending back Tyson Dukes' fingers for the submission, so he wins. Zack Sabre advances to the next round. We had Drew Gulak and Harv Sira, one half of the Bollywood Boys. Gulak's another one, very mat-based, very technical. Dragon sleeper into a body scissors for the submission win for Gulak, so it'll be Drew Gulak and Zack Sabre Jr. in the next round if you are not a fan of their style of wrestling. That might be a match you want to skip, but I would suggest that you don't, because I have a feeling that the two of them are going to have a great match. In fact, I'm pretty sure I saw that match at an indie show a few months ago. Tony Nese, who has been around for a while now. I know he was in TNA for a bit. I've seen him on a bunch of independent shows here in this area. A lot of these guys, really, I have seen. I mentioned Gulak and Zack Sabre. Nese took on Anthony Bennett. Technically, his name would be Tony Bennett, which I find humorous. But unfortunately, they billed him as Anthony Bennett. Nese gave him a power slam, and the match kind of stopped for a second. The referee was checking on Bennett. I don't know if he was knocked out briefly. I don't know if he had the wind knocked out of him. Because Tony Nese went up to the top, and the ref is like, just hold it for a second. And Nese is like, what the hell's going on here? And so finally, the ref said, okay, he gave the all clear. Nese landed a 450 off the top rope for the pin. It's a very weird finish. The little stoppage there kind of broke the flow of the match. But Tony Nese wins, so he moves on. And lastly, we have the Brian Kendrick and Raul Mendoza from Mexico. Mendoza was the standout here in this match. Kendrick, you know, when Kendrick first came out, he got a big babyface pop. Everybody was happy to see him. They recognized him. But by the end, he's so good, and Mendoza also. Mendoza was so good, but Kendrick as a heel, and knowing how to read things, he was so good that he had the crowd against him. People were booing everything that he did. And Mendoza earned a ton of respect from the crowd. Kendrick worked heel. He got the win. So he advances. And that was it. Very straightforward show. Next episode is this Wednesday. It'll be Rich Swann against Jason Lee. Noam Dar against Gurv Sira. Jack Gallagher against Fabian Aichner. And Johnny Gargano against his NXT tag team partner, Tommaso Ciampa. So that's coming up on the Cruiserweight Classic this Wednesday. Got some Lucha Underground notes. We got some great news on the Lucha Underground front this week. Lucha Underground Season 3 will be on the air a hell of a lot sooner than I thought. Wednesday, September 7th. Mark it down. That's only 5 weeks away. And even better, and this is something that Katrina herself, if you remember when I interviewed her here on the Sound Off, she confirmed this. There was an order for additional episodes of the show. So Season 3 is going to have 40 episodes, the longest season yet. And per Lucha Blog, that would mean that the finale is likely going to air on or around June 7th of next year. So that's how long the season is going to go. It's not ending until June. That's very cool. Speaking of Katrina, last week she used a new move, shall we say, on the Ultima Lucha finale, where she not only gave Ivelisse the lick of death, but she rubbed Ivelisse's face in her cleavage. And I, only half-joking, suggested that they go with the name Breast in the World as a name for that move, and I asked you guys to try to come up with some other names. There were three that I really liked. Motorboat del Muerte was one of them. I thought that was kind of clever. The Booby Trap. I thought that was really clever. But the absolute best one that I heard all week, and I want to give him credit here, it came from YouTube, Baze Liquids. He suggested Breast in Peace, which, you know, given the nature of the Katrina character, is just absolutely perfect. So that's what we will call it if she ever does that again, Breast in Peace. That's the new name. All right, let's get to your mailbag questions. I want to dedicate some more time to that this week. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Drez from the Bronx. WWE released their quarterly earnings this week, and I saw reports that WrestleMania did not do 100,000 fans, but actually did a lot less. Is this true? Well, on his Twitter page, I saw Dave Meltzer mention that for the first quarter, WWE drew over 409,000 fans total to their live events, all live events. 329,000 came from all of the non-WrestleMania shows. So by my math, and I wasn't a math major in school, but by my math, 409 less 329 gives me 80,000. Which would be the actual WrestleMania attendance. And that's their own official numbers. These are not imaginary made-up numbers. These are their numbers. From them, you can deduce that WrestleMania 32 actually had 80,000 fans in attendance, which would make it the second largest legit attendance all time in WWE behind SummerSlam at Wembley Stadium. I think that SummerSlam did only a few hundred people more. WrestleMania 3, you know, I don't know what else to say about that at this point. People are going to believe whatever the hell they want to believe. But this is just another example that, you know, the announced numbers on these shows are part of the entertainment. It's part of the show. They knew months before WrestleMania, before they even knew how many people they were going to have in that building, they knew that they were breaking the all-time record in Dallas no matter what. It was just a matter of what number are we going to announce. Shamar from Connecticut. With the Cruiserweight division being on Raw, do you see them having the first hour like WCW did with Nitro? It's a three-hour show, and with great talent that they will be getting from the tournament, do you see this as being a good show opener? Yeah, you know, I don't know about dedicating the entire first hour to it, but as I said earlier, I think they'd be crazy not to open the show, at least on some weeks, with like a hot Cruiserweight match. We're so used to seeing the opening promo. Like, even this Raw show from this week, which I thought was great, it opened with a giant promo, but it had to, because they had to establish things. Now, I don't want to see that every week. Like this week, I don't want to see Raw open every single week with a promo segment. So at some point, you want to change it up a little bit. Yeah, you put two cruiserweight guys out there, even if the crowd doesn't know who they are. Put two of them out there. Let them, like, take the chains off. Let them have a kick-ass match. You know, at the beginning of the show is the best time for it, because even if people don't know who they are, people are going to be hot, right? They're going to be hot at the very beginning of the show. That, I think, would be a great show opener. Now, I wouldn't have a full hour of cruiserweight matches. I think that's a bad idea. You want to have a second one on the show, you can, you know, put it in the middle of hour two, or something like that. That's fine. So I wouldn't do a whole hour, but to open the show, absolutely. Anthony from DC, I just heard an interview with Vince Russo where he said the whole David Arquette WCW reign was a Tony Schiavone idea. Are you buying this? I got another question from someone this week about the Arquette stuff, that I guess he also said the whole thing was a success. So I'm guessing this must have been from the same interview that you're talking about. First of all, the Schiavone thing. I've heard Russo in a shoot interview claim this. I don't know if you're thinking of the same one. It may well be true. I don't know. What puzzles me about that, and I wish I knew where to find it because I tried looking for it after I got your question and I had no luck. I want to say it was on onewrestling.com, which Bill Apter now works for, but at the time he did not. This would have been only a few years after WCW went under. So this is many, many, many years ago, and Russo did an interview. And again, at that time, the Arquette stuff would have been a lot more fresh in his mind than it was when he did that shoot interview where he mentioned that it was Tony Schiavone's idea. In that interview, he talked about someone pitching the idea to him, but he couldn't remember who it was. And so I find that a bit odd that he couldn't remember who pitched it to him, but yet years later, he remembers it like it was yesterday. But I wouldn't dismiss it. It may well have been from Tony Schiavone. You know, best thing to do would be to ask Tony directly. I would, but I can't because he blocked me. I have no idea why. I don't ever remember saying a bad word about the guy, but he did. So if you want to ask him, you know, be my guest. But I want to take a few minutes here to address this idea that putting the WCW title on David Arquette was some big success. You know, you hear those words and you think, is this guy delusional? But I think it's important to understand a few things about this. According to Russo, it was a success because it got them on the cover of USA Today the very next day. It got them publicity, which is what, in his view, it was designed to do. And also, you know, it was a success because here we are 16 years later still talking about it, which is completely nonsensical to say. I mean, one has nothing to do with the other. People still talk about the Shockmaster 20 years later. I would hardly call that a success. It ruined that poor guy's career. Although now, somehow, Shockmaster's become this beloved figure. But still, hardly a success. DDP, coming into WWE as the Stalker. He spoke about that in the interview I did with him this week. He still, to this day, gets questions about the Stalker angle. Hardly a success. And he hated doing it. Now, the Montreal Screwjob, there's an example of something that people still talk about to this day. People, to the point where people won't shut the fuck up about it. And it actually contributed to a boom in business for WWE. It helped solidify Vince McMahon as one of wrestling's greatest villains. And it made them a ton of money. So there are examples that you can point to of things that, oh, people still talk about it years later and it was a success. This does not fall into that category. Let's take that argument, you know, about people still talk about it and put that to bed. That has nothing to do with this. In Russo's mind, though, based on his own criteria for what makes a successful wrestling angle, yes, it was a success. I truly believe that he believes that it was a success. Because, and I've heard him say this before too, it was not his job to worry about the long-term health of WCW's business. In his view, that's not what he was hired for. They hired him to write a television show that would bring in new viewers. So to Russo, you know, any publicity is good publicity. Which, as someone who works in publicity as a living, I can tell you, could not be further from the truth, okay? Believe me. But if Russo thought, I mean, look, if Russo thought that him streaking naked through the frickin' arena on live TV would get them on the cover of USA Today, he'd have done it. And he probably would have had it framed on his wall. So he was writing for the here and now. He wasn't interested in Nitro's ratings 6 months from now, or Thunder's ratings 6 months from now, what the pay-per-view buy rates were going to be 3 months from now. He didn't give a shit. So, you know, he wanted to pop a number that week. So by those metrics, I look back, and I brought this stuff up in front of me here. It's in front of me on the screen because I knew I had your question on my list. I have a list here of the ratings, which is all I ever hear him talk about. Ratings, 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 ratings. Even throughout his whole time in TNA, it was all about the ratings, bro. All about the ratings. Okay, so let's take a look at these ratings. Okay, the match where David Arquette won the WCW title took place on Thunder, okay? Nitro, two nights earlier, did a 3.1 Nielsen rating. This was before the title change. The following Monday, which would have been after David Arquette won the WCW championship, and after they got their big front page story or their front page mention in USA Today, Nitro's rating was down to a 2.5. Not even a curiosity bump. Now, Nitro was back up to the 3.0 range a few weeks later, but that was after Arquette had already dropped the belt, I think it was to Jeff Jarrett. So the angle was already over by then. Now, Thunder, the night that Arquette won the title, did a 2.7 Nielsen rating. The following week, it did a 2.3. Again, no bump. Slamboree, the next WCW pay-per-view after Arquette had won the championship. The same pay-per-view where he defended the title. So this big celebrity that WCW got, right? He talks about he's a celebrity. And they were able to promote a celebrity defending their world title on a pay-per-view. Okay, that Slamboree show, the buy rate was down from the previous month. And not just down by a little, it was down by a lot. Spring Stampede in April did 115,000 buys. Slamboree was down a few weeks later to 65,000. Now, by the Bash at the Beach, they were back up to 100,000, but after that, it was all downhill from there. They never reached that number ever again. So, by every metric, David Arquette winning the WCW title was hardly a success. Unless your only criteria in judging whether or not it was a success was what kind of publicity it got for you. And by that metric, then yes, Vince Russo can say that it was a success. But here's the thing I don't think he quite understands. And I say this as someone who, I've never written a wrestling TV show. I've never booked a wrestling TV show or any of that, okay? He has, I haven't. So I say this as an outsider, an outside point of view. What he doesn't get, he mocks wrestling fans for talking about the world title like it's some sort of real, you know, championship that means something, like it's the Stanley Cup or something like that. He says, you know, belts are nothing but props. And he's not wrong. The belts are props, technically, on a television show, right, to a large extent. But, by that point in the year 2000, WCW, I mean, they were already on their way down. Their audience was nothing like it used to be. They chased so many people off with bad television. A lot of them went to WWE. Some of them probably just stopped watching wrestling altogether. So their audience by this point was pretty much whittled down to their base. They had their base left, and not much more than that. It's like WWE now, right? Raw's ratings have been declining for a long time. They had that excellent show last week. I thought it was great. Those 3 hours breezed by. They created a new star. It had a fresh feel to it. It's way too early, though, to call that show a success. You know, let's revisit that in 6 weeks or 3 months and see where the ratings are, where the live attendance is. Then we can call it a success or not. Maybe it's just one really great episode of Monday Night Raw. But their ratings have been declining for a while now, to the point where people have been asking the question, how low will it go? What's the bottoming out point for Monday Night Raw? Nobody knows. But I can tell you this, I don't know what that magic number is, but the fact is, Raw will always have a certain number of viewers, no matter what. I don't know if the bottoming out is 2.0, 1.8, 2.2. I don't know what the magic number is, but they have their base. They have their base that will watch the product no matter how bad it gets. You could put a fucking test pattern on the screen with a scroll on the bottom that says, eat shit and die, and those people are still going to sit there and watch. Probably because they figure, oh, it must be a vignette for a new wrestler that's coming on, is about to debut. I got to see this, right? Okay, so they have their base. WCW's base by that point, those were those long-time, die-hard, loyal WCW fans that stuck with them through the thick and thin. Like the real wrestling fans, the ones that Russo just detests. He hates them. Those are the people that care about the world title. Those are the people that treat the world title like it's actually something special. They want to believe that it's something special. Now, they're not stupid. They know it's not real. They know the champions are handpicked. It's all just an act. It's all fake. But they want to believe. Wrestling is all about suspension of disbelief. You know, when I watch the Cruiserweight Classic, they treat it like an actual sports presentation, like it's an actual athletic competition. This guy is from Japan against this guy from Mexico. Who's going to advance? Now, I know they've already got their winner picked out. I'm not an idiot. I know it's not real, but I don't care. I want to believe that it's real. And what Russo did was he shit on all of those people. He shit on his base. He basically whipped his dick out and smacked all of those people in the face with it. Because to him, who cares? It's just a prop. It's not real. So who gives a shit who holds the title? And when Nitro was doing fours and fives in the Nielsen ratings, and you had all of these fair weather wrestling fans who were just casuals, who started watching because, ooh, this looks cool. Wrestling's cool. You know what? Maybe something like David Arquette winning the title would have actually worked as a one-time stunt. I think if they put the title on Dennis Rodman, when Rodman first came in and he was affiliated with the NWO, had Rodman won the championship, that actually might have worked. It would have gotten them publicity, and it probably would have gotten them, you know, a bump in the ratings and a spike in interest. Like, something like that might have actually worked. But in 2000, with your base audience of wrestling fans, that was the last thing they wanted to see. They thought it was insulting. It was insulting to them. The wrestlers thought it was insulting. DDP, when the idea was first pitched to him, he thought it was a rib. He thought somebody was ribbing him. And then he realized they weren't, and he was fucking repulsed by the idea. And he had heat for years with Russo over it before they finally buried the hatchet in TNA. David Arquette. David Arquette himself did not want to do it. The very man who won the title thought it was an insult to the legacy of the championship. Because he was one of those longtime diehard wrestling fans. He was part of that base that Russo was shitting on. And he was too stupid to realize it. And David Arquette, you know, by all accounts, David Arquette was a real stand-up guy. I think he donated all the money WCW paid him to Brian Pillman's widow. You know, very classy on his part. But even he was like, what the fuck? Are you serious? Bro? He was one of the very people that Russo was alienating. And because he wasn't concerned about the long game, he was writing for the moment and not realizing, you know, the damage he was doing to the product, it did more harm than good. You know, yeah, you got the front page of USA Today. Congratulations. What does it mean? You know, I can do work on behalf of one of my clients and I can get them a story in the New York Times. And I could be, you know, pump my chest out and be like, hey, I got a story in the New York Times. But guess what? If that story doesn't result in any sort of increased business for them, you know, what did it really mean? If nobody saw it, but it was there, what does it really mean? You've got to be able to measure these things. And you know what all those people were doing when they saw that in USA Today, when you know, Joe Blow number one picked up USA Today and saw the cover and saw that David Arquette had won the WCW title. You know what they did? They didn't watch Nitro. They didn't watch Thunder. They fucking left. They were laughing their fucking asses off. This wasn't Tyson and Austin getting into a shoving match on TV. That actually did bring in new viewers. Tyson at WrestleMania was one of the turning points for that company. And it helped elevate their top star in the process. So hey, it was a win-win. Not one new fan was created from David Arquette winning the WCW title. It didn't even pop a rating. But you know, hey, but by God, 16 years later, people are still talking about it. I mean, hell, I just spent 15 minutes talking about it. But I think it's important to understand that you know, based on his own criteria for what constitutes a success, it was a success. To the rest of us Earthlings, our reality is very different than the one that he lives in. Maybe it's just his way of, you know, rationalizing it and making himself feel better because people are constantly shitting on him for it. I don't know. All I know is it's never a good idea to insult whatever audience you have left. Keith from California. Both Finn Balor and Dolph Ziggler are contenders for the titles at SummerSlam. Both are hard workers, not the biggest, and have weird-ass names. I just thought if they formed a tag team, Dolph Finn would be the name. I know that sounds terrible and hope it doesn't really happen, but it just came to my mind and I thought it was funny. That's terrible. You should know better. Don't give them ideas like that. Dave from Liverpool, UK. Seeing as the action figures for the Ultimate Maniacs have been released, I was wondering what the background was behind the formation of the tag team. Was it simply nothing left for them, so let's team them, or was it simply moving both away from the title contention or something more backstage against Warrior and Savage? Now, I always just figured they were heading into Survivor Series. Warrior and Savage, they had that match at Wembley Stadium. They kind of formed an alliance together. They were heading into Survivor Series. They didn't have a championship match in mind. They were going to do them against Flair and Razor. That had been the feud going on with those four for a while, and it was just a match. It was just a temporary thing, and that was really all it was going to be. And then Warrior, of course, got fired, and the championship got switched over to Bret Hart, and everything got changed. Jeremy from Chicago. I was watching WrestleMania 18 the other day and was downright disgusted with the main event. Not match quality-wise, not because of the booking or the crowd, but the fact that both Triple H and Chris Jericho were wearing so much fake tanner to the point they began to resemble spoiled oranges or loaves of bread. My question to you is, what are some of the most orange matches in history, and why is it that many wrestlers feel the need to apply so much fake tanner for big main event matches? Well, I mean, pretty much every Hulk Hogan match is an orange match. I mean, where do you think the Orange Goblin nickname comes from? Look, it's still a cosmetic business. You know, when you're on TV, you want to look your best. Unfortunately for a lot of these guys, they don't realize how ridiculous they look with all that fake tanner on. I think The Miz was maybe the worst I ever saw. I remember there was one night where he sprayed his front but not his back. I mean, some guys, it runs during the match. And now in HD, it's even worse. It's the people that go overboard with it. Like, I get why they do it, but it's the people that go overboard. Those are the ones who I think need an intervention. Johnny from Wynn, Arkansas. Buy or sell on the better bodyguard, Diesel for Shawn Michaels or China for DX? Well, if we're talking Triple H, forget DX. I want to talk about Triple H. Okay, I'm thinking specifically for Triple H. I'm buying on China, and I'm selling on Diesel. Just much better heat with China as his bodyguard because she's a woman beating up the men, and they can't hit her back. I mean, I know some of them did later on, but I mean, when she first came in, it was such a great way to get heat on Triple H. Like, what an asshole. He's hiding behind a woman, right? The guys can't fight back, so she could pretty much have her way with them, and they couldn't do anything about it. That's why it works so well. Alan from Queens, New York. Buy or sell, The Rock versus Triple H at Backlash 2000 or Stone Cold Steve Austin versus Dude Love at Over the Edge 98? Oh, why must you do this to me? You know how I feel about that Austin Dude Love match. I think, all things being equal, those two matches, they're almost identical. You know, in one, you had Vince McMahon stacking the deck against Steve Austin and doing everything in his power to make sure he lost the title. And in the other one, you had Vince McMahon stacking the deck against The Rock and doing everything in his power to make sure he didn't win the title. So, and you had tons of interference in both matches, hot crowds, as most of them were back then for those pay-per-view main events. So, you go to the finish. Let's make the finish the tiebreaker here. And as great as the last few minutes are of that Austin Dude Love match, it can't top that Rock Triple H match. So I'm buying the Backlash match. I'm selling on Over the Edge. And by the way, that entire Backlash pay-per-view in 2000 is one of the best pay-per-views that WWE ever produced. There's a classic match on there between Chris Jericho and Chris Benoit. I think that's the show. Somebody will tell me if I'm wrong. I think that's the show with the awesome finish to the Dean Malenko-Scotty Too Hotty match where Malenko killed him and beat him with a DDT off the top rope. There's a match between Kurt Angle and the Big Show. It's trash, but, I mean, Big Show comes out to Real American. He's all dressed up as the Showster, brother, and it's fucking hilarious. I mean, Big Show's Hogan impersonation is awesome anyway, but that was very entertaining. The match itself was nothing, but that was very cool. I know Austin was supposed to be in The Rock's corner. He didn't show up until the end. They didn't say why. Not like legit, but just in storyline. I guess the assumption is that, oh, you know, Vince and the corporation, they did something. Or Vince and the McMahon-Helmsley faction, they did something. So Austin eventually showed up at the end when his music hit. Now, you got to remember, this was only a few months after he had the neck surgery. So he was like a month or two out of his halo. He had a halo around his head. He was only out of it for like a month or two. And when that music hit, the place went nuts for him. And he mowed down about, I don't know, six people with chair shots of the head. And from the time Austin's music hit to the time Rock got the pin, it was basically one long sustained crowd pop. I mean, the crowd never died down. Linda McMahon showed up. She had Earl Hebner. Earl Hebner had just been fired on TV by Triple H the week before. So story-wise, she's bringing back Earl Hebner to get the revenge pin. It was so great. And honestly, it was one of the greatest finishes ever, I think, to a pay-per-view main event in WWE. So the finish puts it over the top. I'm going to buy on the Backlash match, and I'm going to sell on the Over the Edge one. So that's going to do it for the mailbag. Keep sending questions, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Even if you don't hear from me or hear them on the show, I do read everything you send. I'm very, very backed up, but please keep trying. You can follow me on Twitter, @solemonster. I put polls up after the shows every single week, thumbs up, thumbs down. I will live tweet during Raw, SmackDown if I'm around to watch it, and all the pay-per-views. So do follow me on there. And also, don't forget, we got PayPal Rumble 3 coming up next Sunday. We're going to pick two winners. If you want a free Sound Off shirt, you can make a $10 donation or more via PayPal on our website, thesolemonster.com. You'll see the button on the right-hand side. Starting now through 10 a.m. Eastern next Sunday, August 7th, you can make your donation and get yourself entered into the tournament. You'll get a shout-out, and then we will pick a winner. We will pick two, in fact. I know people have gotten their Sound Off shirts. They've been very happy. We do one of these every now and then. So this is the third one. PayPal Rumble 3, brother. So get in on that. And don't forget to leave us some love in iTunes and Stitcher. You could leave a review. We are a 5-star rated podcast. You can listen to the show in a multitude of different ways. If iTunes isn't updating for you, you can try Stitcher. We're on player.fm, we're on Audio Boom, Google Play Music, we're on there. We have a free downloadable app if you are an Android user in the Google Play Store. You can get all the episodes that way. You can get the episodes through the Podbean app. You could try an app like Podcast Addict. There's a lot of different ways to listen to these shows. And also, don't forget, we got the bonus content on our YouTube channel. We had a ton of stuff go up this week. I'm telling you right now, there's going to be more coming in the weeks to come. And if you want to get a notification when it goes up, that's the way to do it, is to subscribe. So go on YouTube and hit the subscribe button. Thank you, as always, for your support. Check out the interview with Diamond Dallas Page. I think you'll enjoy it. It's really, really good stuff. And we'll be back with a brand new episode next weekend. That'll be 454. So until then, be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great week. And we'll see you back here for more Sound Off next time. Until then, take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solemonster sounds off.
I'm just saying, I don't know, with New Day, you got three black guys out there. Why Francesca?
You want to call it Tyrone the Trombone?
Okay. No, that's racist.
Well, no, it's...
Racist, no.
I'm not racist. Go to Hulk Hogan for that. That's not me.
You know, usually the people that go, I'm not racist, yeah, right. Those are the racists.
Solemonster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Solemonster sounds off. Available at thesolemonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solemonster sound off.